It's about prototypes today. So, what are we going to see today? We'll talk about the basic features that prototype languages agree on, what's definitely necessary. We will see how we can do structured data in prototype-based languages, and we can see how principles of code reusage and modularization can be done, or can be kind of done, in languages that are prototype-oriented. And especially, we are going to concentrate on trying to achieve similar things that we can do with standard object-oriented systems in systems where we have prototypes as our main main means of modularizing. So the general introduction is rather short. It can be boiled down to one sentence. Why should we bother with types when we just want to do a quick hack and just want to try out something? And in general, designing something like types is something that is challenging, and you have to think a lot about. And if you just need to have one instance of that thing, why should you even bother to do so? Because you're going to use it only once anyway. So I know that's a little bit of a controversial opinion, but anyway, that's what motivated people to come up with something different than the standard object-oriented approaches, which talk a lot about types. And the things that were in the way for some people, that were keeping them from being productive, aware that for once types for singletons is something like, it seems like a bit redundant to at first concentrate on using on specifying a type, and then start anew and try to use it and bother with all that object creation anyway. There should be something more easy if you want to use your object anyway only once, and or your class only one time. The other thing is that the design of your methods in terms of getting the types right can be quite ambitious, especially when you're thinking of something like generics in Java or some other means of abstracting types in some way. Especially when you think of problems that are related with co and contra variants. I know we haven't treated them yet in the lecture, but that's something that's tricky, or even a few people might also say that it's even impossible to get it right in some situations. So that's also something that's quite bothersome. So one might ask, why should I bother at all with things like that? And in fact, it seems, especially when you think back to the lectures that we had already, that with the means that we have, we always have to do little tricks in order to make our structures model the world that we want them to model. So the question is, if we have to do tricks anyway, why should we even care about something so strict as types when we always have to fight against them? So that's what the last point should be about. So what would be the alternative? Well, the basic ideas for this new approach was that, well, that people wanted to just try to develop programs by just starting to write their code, and while writing the code, trying to add the necessary means so that the things that I have written down just work. So that's a sort of approach like they have in agile programming. That's with starting with creating just the example of what I want to do, and then try to make it work with just a bare set of basic concepts, and to introduce complexity only if you really need it. This can be done quite well if you give the user the method to kind of have influence on what the language actually offers. So the idea would be to give the users the control about the basic concepts that that are essential to programming languages. We have heard a few of them, for example, this inheritance or delegation or dispatching. All those were basic concepts that were kind of predefined by the languages that we have seen. And in our case, the idea would be to give the users the full control about all that and let them shape the language as they need it. So that's what the last point is all about. Well, so far with all the nicely looking promises, is there an approach to which actually tries to give you the tools to get started with something like the ideas from before? And the idea is, well, there is one concept with this prototype-based languages, and there's certain ones that have implemented all these features, for example, Lua. So let's have a look at Lua. Does anyone have any experiences in programming Lua? So we have already 3, 4, 5. Well, that's quite a lot, I'd say. So you can correct me if I do any errors. I'm not an active Lua programmer. So yeah, the basic things that you will need anyway is, for example, being able to work with variables and do computations. That's something that won't change too much in something like Lua, because, well, that's not so innovative. So what can you do there? You can do simple assignments. You don't even need anything to separate them from each other. So you can, in cases where everything is unique, you can just leave away the semicolon. You can do comments, just like that. And even cases like these work in sometimes when it's unique what you write down. So that might also work without a separator. You can have multi-line comments. Well, not so surprising. And yeah, that's about it. Nothing too fancy right now. Let's have a more closer look on what values and types are in Lua. So the basic concept is that we will handle types in a dynamic way. So there's no definition of types, and you don't even have to assign a type for a variable. It is dynamically typed. That means that the value carries its own type, and all the checks that are necessary or all the specializations that are necessary are done at runtime. But you can have a look into what the types of your values are, and for that you get a function like this, which is called type. So let's have a look at what is actually possible. We can start with a Boolean value, for example. We can simply assign it to a variable, and type gives us Boolean for this thing. So far, nothing new. Then there's also numbers and strings, and yeah, you might wonder what adding a number to a string is. And in this case, the decision is that it is overwritten by the number version of addition, which means that 42 is converted to a number and then added to the other number. Okay. If you want to do concatenation, you need to have another operator, which is these two dots. Then you get the string. You can also use the types on more complex things like function names, which will be function as a type, so function is also a type in Lua. Then there's something that is kind of placeholder for a value, which is the nil. And nil has an extra type. Nil is no ordinary type, but it is the type nil, so it has its own type. And the only member of this type is the value nil. Yeah, you can have even multi-line expressions of strings. In this case, you need to delimit them with special characters. And what's most important for my point here is that in dynamical environments, you can redefine your variables with different type. So although we started out with A as a Boolean, we can reassign A with 42, and afterwards its type will be number. Okay, so just dynamic typing. About functions, well, functions are treated as first-class citizens, which means that functions can be treated as ordinary values of names. So, yeah, what do you do in order to create a value for of a function type? That is, yeah, you can do that with a function keyword. Then you continue with the name of the thing that you. The name of the variable under which you want to access your function afterwards, like calling it, and you then start with your parameters over here, and the body, and end the whole thing with an end. Yeah. With that, you can just do assignments as you are used to it already. So you can do. You can assign prettyprint to A, and afterwards you will get an A. A will be, act as a reference to the old prettyprint function. So yeah, we can call it by using this reference A. And what is actually executed will be this prettyprint body that we have defined over there. So with A. Dr. Simon 42, we will end up with Dr. Simon born in, well, that's probably, I've designed the code of last year, so that's why it is 2014, but yeah, with a certain age. The main thing about the about it is that you can act the functions act as ordinary values, so you can use the them as anonymous values also, like it is done in the next example. Here we create an anonymous function and assign it to. Another name, that is a name that we had used before for prettyprint, and in this case prettyprint is now a reference to new function, and A remains as the only reference to the old function over here. So yeah, functions are just also values like they have been like ordinary numbers. Okay, so that's all quite non-exceptional. Yet the question is now, how is data grouped? How can we create structure in our data? And for that, the answer is quite simple. There's not so much you can that you can do for introducing structure. The only thing that you have is tables, well, kind of hash tables. What can you do in hash tables? You can index in hash tables with keys. Keys can be every value that you have created in your program, except for nil. Nil is not a valid value for the keys in your tables. These tables can grow arbitrarily large and can also shrink. Once again, that's not predetermined. That depends on the implementation of the whole thing. Now, how is it used? Well. Creation of an empty table is just done with the curly braces here. So empty curly braces create an empty table. You can give, yes, please. While I was telling you that you can use arbitrary values, I was wondering whether I could use functions as values. I haven't tried them, but you can? No? So that's consistent in this case. Yeah?
I was wondering nearly the same thing, but is it possible using those dynamic values like the tables? Because in Python, there is not a possibility for using as a key.
I have to okay. Well, I have not tried yet, so a few lines of code. I haven't tried either, but that was just what I have read. But if you can have a function values as index. Might be the. Actually, good questions. That's something that I should have checked beforehand. Yeah. Anyway, you can use strings. You can use numbers. You might even use functions. Well, for tables, I haven't checked. Okay. So, anyway, how do you use these hash tables? You can choose either to use them with these square brackets like this. So in this case, you would assign pi to the 42th slot. So in this case, we would index with the number 42. What we can also do is we can index with a string like k. So in this time we would enter 42 at the key. We can also delete certain key value pairs. So have you checked? So it seems to be associated with some kind of address of the table or something, probably. Yeah. So seems to be true. So even for tables and functions. Well, nice. Okay, and. Apart from that, there's also some kind of abbreviation, kind of syntactic sugar that makes your hash tables look like plain structures that you know from C. So in the case that you use syntax like this one with a dot, what you'll actually do is the same as above. You will use the string that comes after the dot as the value with which you want to index. So that's a kind of synonyms. Okay. So about the little bit more about tables, for example, I call it life cycle here. So they are created empty or with some mappings already inside. So you can write key value pairs separate with commas inside. Modification is. Or tables are mutable, so modifications are persistent. You have you can do assignments with tables, and the idea with such an assignment is that you copy the reference to or you create a reference to the same table that you have used before. Yeah, and in case that you you lose any reference to a table, it might be garbage collected. So garbage collection is something that can be added to the system. So in this case, for example, I try to illustrate these things like persistent modification and reference semantics. So I fill my my table with 42 at key. That is probably still K, that's, so that's probably from the last slides. Yeah, K is 42, so I fill in 42 at 42. Then I create a new reference to the same table with name B. In there I add an entry K for the key K, and then I print out the old references K, which is kind of transformed syntactically into an indexing access with the string K, which will then still yield K. I can remove a reference to this table by setting A to nil, and when I print the B, it will be still K, and only if I throw away the B, then the whole thing is nil now. In this case, do you have the console open for Lua still? I was now wondering, now that B is nil, can you still try to dereference? I would expect a runtime error here, but so okay, so I can think we can postpone it, but you can give the answer later, because I think you need to go on. Yeah, but that needs to be defined somehow, so there's a semantics for that. Okay, that's not so special so far. The interesting thing now is how can you do compose types with the measures that you have so far. So let's try to do that. And the means that you get from the Lua system is called metatables. What is metatables? Metatables are plain, ordinary, simple tables that are used to provide special methods for certain use cases. And the way that you need to provide them is you have to keep certain naming conventions and parameter conventions for these special functions. And you can make ordinary tables to act as metatables by connecting them to other tables via this set meta table function. Yes.
For your question, if B.K works, at least the online console spits out attempt to index a nil value to global value B.
You have the key as being nil, or the table is nil.
The table is nil, therefore it cannot
okay.
Access B.K.
So yeah, that's what I would have expected by doing that. Yeah. So. Yeah, it's actually an error to do so. Thank you. Okay, back to the current thing now. To make tables being metatables for other tables, you need to connect them via set metatable. And this is going to change the behavior of the tables that you connect the other ones to. So let's have an example for that. Let's create an ordinary table that we want to make a metatable afterwards. In this table, we will add a new function that shall alter the behavior of another table. There are certain conventions that you need to use. In this case, I want to provide or change the way that Lua prints information to the console when I offer a certain table. In order to do so, I need to provide a toString method. So what I do is I introduce such a toString key in the meta table, I can do so by writing function meta dot underscore underscore to string. And yeah, if I give this this to string method a person, which is some kind of table somehow, then what it will do is it will dereference prefix from person and concatenate with an empty space and concatenate with the person's name, and then just end. So what this special toString method will do is it will connect a few strings that it gets from reading from some attributes. Yeah. So what we what remains now to do is that we need to provide an a table for which we want to which we want to enhance the functionality of. So I will do so with this table A. This table will be having the key values prefix is doctor and name is Simon. And now I connect it to the table that I've created before, which now will act as a meta table. So I will connect A with the table meta. And this has installed meta as the meta table for A. And if I now print out A, the conversion of A to a string will happen via the call of toString on A. And this will lead to A being queried for the prefix and the name. So this will, what will that do? Well, it will just write out Dr. Simon for this table A. Okay, so the basic concept is clear, I hope. You create a collection of special methods adhering to special naming conventions and signature conventions. And with that, you can alter the behavior of some objects at runtime. There's a few examples for these special names. And there's some arithmetic ones, like these ones. These special names are used for altering the behavior whenever you use expressions with the operators that belong to these methods. So if you would would program something like A times A, then the system will try to call the multiplication the special function that treats the multiplication operator. So by providing such a special function in your meta table, you can overload the operator for multiplication. Okay, so yeah, that's one of the uses for the whole thing. The other thing, the comparators, that's not so different from the ordinary operators. So yeah, that's for arithmetics or something that has to look similar than that. Mm-hmm. Unary minus. That's a valid question. That's not so clear from right from the start. Okay, yeah. So that's something that's not too fancy. Operator overloading is there in other languages too. But the main thing that is of interest for us right now, that we want to create some kind of modularity and structure for data. The main thing for us now is another special name, and that is the name underscore underscore index, because this one is responsible for handling failed name lookups. So, in every case when the program code that the interpreter finds queries a table for a value that is not there, will kind of lead to nil, except that in cases where you have given a table such a, an entry at this index key in its meta table, then it will execute the method that is stored there instead. And the convention is that you can store their method with two parameters. The first one is the actual receiver table, and the second one is the key value. Those are the two things that you get as parameters. So let's have a look at an example for that. We start with the empty meta table. We provide once again the string method from before. So that's not too different from before. And then we also add another function. This function is now registered under the special name index, and it gets its two parameters, the original receiver and the original key value. Now we can do custom things. And the thing that I've done here is that I have delegated, or I delegate the lookup of this certain key in the original table to another table that is called prototype, and look the key value in up in this one. So when I try to do that in practical code, how does that look like? Well, let's create a few of these a few tables. First of all, let's create a job table. That's a table that carries only one key value with the prefix doctor. And then I create another table, person. And this person has the first key name Simon. And the other one is I call prototype. And this prototype has as value the job table. So in this setting, when I use the meta table that I've created so beforehand, that's what I do here. When I then use the print method, this will go straight to the string over there, which will try to obtain the value for the key prefix. Let's have a look at whether the person actually has a prefix. We see the person has a name and a prototype, but there's no prefix. So that is an failed name lookup for the person table. So what's going to happen now is that the handler for the failed name lookup is called. This one is stored under index in the meta table. And it says that when in person the lookup is failed, then take the failed key, which is given here, and look it up in table's prototype. So what's actually done is that I delegate the name resolution to the prototype, and in prototype we find the table from job, and inside of job we find our key, which was prefix, and it will yield doctor as a string. Yes, please? That would be bad. Yes. Yeah, that's a very compact version of what I want to do here in order to not overload the slides. But if you want to be cautious, you should, of course, try to keep the system from such situations. So, yeah. Yeah, that's like programming in this style is like standing in front of a wall and aiming with your mortar and hoping that everything goes well. So, yeah, might turn out good, but might also go horribly wrong. Yeah. Okay, so that is how this index actually works. So for you, once again, the situation in memory. There's the person table. The person table carries the name. That's the key value that we have stored there directly, and the key value for prototype. And in prototype, we have stored another table, which is this job table, and this one carries the prefix. What we also have done is that we have called set meta table. This will lead internally to setting another key with meta as its value, and meta is another table which carries the methods to string and index. And this index will then access the prototype with the key. Okay, so that's how the whole thing is organized. Yeah, but that's just a very clumsy way of doing the whole thing, because conveniently we don't have to use a function for a value for this attribute index. But we can also directly store the table that we want to delegate to inside of this index key. So, yeah, that's the whole example once again, but with a more a direct way to specify that. So in this case, we create meta. We just provide the toString method. Then we start with the job. And yeah, job will be the delegation target for our meta table. So we fill meta's delegation slot with the job table. Then let's create the person. And yeah, let's do connect them via meta tables. So person has meta as meta table now, and now printing the person will lead to once again a failed name lookup in a person directly, but instead of calling default handler, it will by default continue in the job table with resolution and will try to resolve there. Okay, so yes. Yeah, it doesn't have the prototype as its own member anymore.
Right, so if you look at now, you have different persons that have different jobs. On the version before,
It does not the whole thing the same way as before, yeah.
Now everyone has the same job.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. This, yeah. Okay. Yeah, but if you want this kind of flexibility, you need to provide your own dispatcher. So that's actually what you do here. You have control over the dispatching functionality by implementing your own code in the index. But yes, that's not the same as here. But in case you want, you just want to delegate to a certain thing, you can do it like this. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, so that's the situation now. In this case, the meta table directly links to job, but each of the, as you say, each of the tables that use meta as meta table will always be linked to the same job in this case. Mm-hmm. Yeah, by the way, there's not only the a way to resolve just read attempts, but also a way to handle write attempts with the new index thing. And this is the callback that you will override if you want to do something whenever there's a write access to something that hasn't been there before. So once again, an example. In this case, our meta table will get a special new index function. So in case that that we want, for example, we could try to come up with some kind of access protection to our object with that. So yeah, let's start with person, and this person will now be trying to do its to hide away its internals a little bit further. So it is it carries its data in another table in there, and yeah, we will use the as index the person's own data. And we set the meta table from before as its meta table, and let's check what is actually done. So we create a new person, we call it Gutenberg, and we then give it a title. So at first, for the person's name, we will run into an access or a write to a so far unknown key. So we will get the new index with the table person and the key name. So let's check whether anything matches. Key is not titled, so everything is fine. And we will enter the key name with the value doctor inside our internal data structure data. So far, so good. Let's continue with the next one, which will be person title is doctor. So in this case, we will once again get table person. The key is title. The value is doctor. So let's check. Key is title. Well, that's good. The table's name is actually Gutenberg. So yeah, our complete condition is true. So in this case, we will yield an error. So we will have kept this attempt from happening. Okay. So that's what you might be able to do with something like new index. Get a callback for write attempts. Good. So how can we use that to do something similar to object orientation or modularizing our software? So far we have not added or have not known something like keeping different instances from each other. As you have said, in when we program like this, we will always keep things the same. So then for example, if we move over to an example from banking with accounts, for example, we will end up with always manipulating the same object. So for example, we will work with accounts now. Accounts have balances, and what we can do is we can withdraw from such an account. So what we might be doing is we will withdraw a certain value from the account. So that's done by removing that from the balance. But if we do so, we will when we withdraw something from there, we will actually modify the original account thing. And there's no thing like multiple instances right now. So let's think back to the things that we have seen already in the last lectures. There has been for example, the patching or the multiple inheritance. In both of those, we have seen that the trick for implementing something like object-oriented systems was that methods were equipped with a specially meant parameter, which was the first parameter, which was always meant to point to the receiver or this instance of of the class. So let's try to do that also here. So we write our account like that. We now introduce an explicit receiver object with this ACK And now what we will do is we will compute on this receiver object and not or this receiver table and not on the original account anymore. So that's what we were doing here. Also, this toString will act like this. And yeah, so it's now see whether that works. We will set account as the meta table for our separately handled table. And now what we need to do is we need to give this table as kind of the receiver of the withdraw call, so to say. If we use it like this, this will withdraw our money from the Giro table instead of the old account one. So, as it happens that we have used the account as the meta table for our Giro, and that the its index slot also points to account, we can also move on and call the withdraw from Giro itself. That's something that's already pretty similar to what we have seen from the mainstream languages. We always have the receiver on the prominent first position of these expressions in these languages, so that's what we can kind of simulate there. And then in the next step, what we can also see is that that Lua gives us special syntax, syntactic sugar. That's this the one that you see here. If you double the amount of points that you use, this the system will kind of do the same thing that you have seen before. It will use the table that you have used over here as internally as the first parameter for the withdraw method, without you having to act to actually repeating the name. So this will just copy the reference over to the first parameter and then call the withdraw method like it is like you have seen over here. So with that you can kind of simulate the behavior that you have seen in object-oriented languages. Yeah, and if you do it like this, you will see that the original accounts balance is kept different from the ones that you have seen in this Giro table. Okay, that's pretty nice, but it still seems like quite handcrafted. In order to get really different instances of the whole thing, the idea would be now that we have seen what steps are actually necessary to create the structures for keeping the instances one from each other. We can now try to automate that. First, there's the image that belongs to the whole thing. Yeah, the Giro table has as meta table the account table, which has its index itself, so the withdraw method will be resolved by looking into the account method. That's what's happening in the code, but you've seen that already. So, in order to get something like classes and instances of separately kept objects, what we can do now is that we can kind of provide something like a constructor. And the way to do so is the way that you see here. First of all, I've switched over to our new syntax for specifying member functions. So what I've done now is that I have used double the amount of points, and this will introduce a new implicit parameter that you can access, like you have been able to access this in standard languages, which is just self. And that is actually referring to the receiver of this method call, in case that you call it with this colon. Things. Okay. So the actual thing that we wanted to have to get now is a constructor. And that's what you see here. So that's a clever way of doing the whole thing that we have done before in a kind of handcrafted way, now in a way that we can reuse it. So the idea is that you can create custom accounts with the, by calling accounts new method. And what it does is it will create a new table. This table will be initialized either with what it gets as parameter, or in case you didn't specify any parameter, it will get a balance of zero as its initial value. Then we will set as a meta table the table self. What is self right now? Self is the account. So it will use account as its meta table. Wow. You know that I have to cut that out afterwards? Or at least. Okay. Well, what we also need to do is we need to no, not like this. We need to redirect any non-resolvable things to account. That's what we can do via setting account as its own delegation target. So in this case, as account acts as a meta table for future custom accounts. This will delegate the unknown calls to accounts members, and account has, for example, withdraw and toString that it can provide as methods. So in case that sometimes later the template will be used, and we will call unknown methods on the template, these will go straight into accounts methods, and there we will find withdraw, for example. Okay, and yeah, now that we have prepared our new anonymous table, we can return it, and yeah, that's supposedly our new custom account. We use it in such a way, like this. Our new Jira account will be created via a new account, and we'll have, for example, a default balance of 10. And then we can just use withdraw and Jira, and this will yield our negative balance here. And we can create other other accounts in the same way. We can just have to call account new once again, and this will create other instances. So that's a kind of simulating the object creation mechanisms from object-oriented systems with very simple measurements. Okay. So far, so good. What we still need to do is, well, in standard object-oriented systems, we had the concept of inheriting from parents. So it would be nice to have something similar too. But yeah, as there is the concept of your own configurable delegation, that should not be too hard. You can even do something like a very easy way of creating singletons by just creating your objects as you have done before, for example, with this account new. And this time, we are already prepared for creating a very special version of account, because in this case, our initialization will also have a limit involved. And now I can modify the table that I've created, this limited account table, with a few lines of code. In this case, what I will do is I will provide another withdraw method. And this withdraw method will be very special in the sense that it will compare its balance and limit with the value that we want to withdraw. And in case that we go deeper than 100, we will print the error that our limit is exceeded and not continue. In every other case, we will delegate to the original account's withdraw method. So that's kind of creating a very special instance of the object that we would otherwise get by default. And so that's a very fast way of creating special objects. And yeah, so we can try to use it the way that we've done before. And yeah, this actually there's something here. Don't know where this comes from. It has no references in there. So the special Jira contour will be yeah, probably that should have illustrated that it will be different from the other thing, but yeah. Okay, so that's how you can modify your objects on the fly. You can also try to create something like multiple inheritance with your Lua interpreter. That's something that you can do, for example, with a function that's actually there to create a new class that delegates to two kind of parent tables. And you can do it in the way that you like. In this case, I've implemented it with a clear preference of parent one's keys. So how can I do that? Well, in this function, at first I create a new... No. First I create a new class or a new table. And for this table, I set as a meta table a new table for which I provide the key index with a new function. So that's a very compact way of creating a meta table. And yeah, in this custom function, I get my receiver and the key which I wanted to resolve. And yeah, what I do is I at first I try to look up the key in parent one. In case that I got something meaningful from that, I will return it. In every other case, I will go to my second parent and try to look up the key over there. So a few lines of code, and I have multiple inheritance in the whole system. Apart from that, all that I need to do is set the target for doing the delegation to C, and yeah, provide a function for creating new instances of tables that use two parents. And yeah, that's all I need to do. With this, I can create these new things. Okay, so that's how multiple inheritance can be done for a constant number for exactly two parents. You might wonder whether you can do more, and actually it's just a question of giving another delegation method over here. And yeah, I think the tutorial will give you the chance to try out to implement another thing. You can also try to do more more intelligent ways of preferring one parent to another, so you're not limited to kind of linearize your parents just in the order that you get them here. You might also come up with something completely different. If you've got the full liberty to do so. So that's the application of the whole thing to tables. So let's have doctor and researcher as our parents. And We can create a researching doctor from doctor and researcher, and then create an actual instance of the whole thing via new, and in this case we will create the researching doctor Axel Simon. And in this case we can print out Axel with his name, and that's the name that we get from our instance. Then we can also refer to the prefix, that's the one that we get from the researcher, and the postfix is the one that will be resolved via the doctor. And the whole thing works as the as in the end, this anonymous function here will be used to resolve the whole thing. And at first, it will try to look up in parent one, which is the doctor, which will lead to resolving postfix. And there's also parent two, which will be queried afterwards. And that's how the prefix will be resolved. Okay. So, you see that you can, if you get the chance to actually determine what something like the function dispatcher in a language does, you have the flexibility to use a lot of the concepts that you have gotten to know so far. You might also try to implement something like mixins or traits in a system like this, but you have to come up with your with clever creator methods for all these cases. You could try to invent a method to create a mixin, for example, or a trait thing. You might wonder how Lua actually implements all of these things. Well, there's not so many different structures involved, as there's simple values and tables in Lua, as its only data types. So all of these are covered with only two structs in actual implementations. There's the one for simple values. For these, they have kind of untyped pointer that is pointing to a value, and it codes its type ID in an integer, and that's all that is needed for plain objects. And for tables, there's different ideas of how to implement them. The most obvious way of implementing them is using plain hash tables. So what they do is they hash on the value that is used as a key, and then store the according values. But as there's certain special cases that are occurring quite often in program code, there's a lot of potential of doing something more clever in a lot of cases. And for example, what is happening quite often is that you use integers as keys in tables. And you do that whenever you want to kind of simulate arrays in your code. And for these cases, practical implementations of Lua might offer optimizations where they discover that you want to actually simulate arrays, and in this case switch over in the implementation to concrete arrays and just map the hash table entries to plain array accesses and do the second implementation. And there's a lot of other optimizations that are actually going on in there, and which might help a lot in executing actual Lua code. So what I have not shown you so far in Lua is all the rest that it's about. It features, for example, coroutines, closures, and there's a concept of a VM involved. But all of that is not so much into modularity as the things that we've seen so far. So I want to end this, this short introduction into Lua at this point. What we have seen so far is, when we give up on types and try to simulate our relations we are used to, with Lua, we might end up with very powerful helpers that can imitate a lot of the features that standard languages can also do without the restrictions that are imposed on standard languages. But we need to take special care and think a lot, or otherwise we might get some very difficult to find runtime errors. And that's always the case when you try to give up on types. You might end up with a lot of errors. But there's also, well, of course, the potential of using compile time analysis to detect these kinds of errors in ahead of time. And there's still a lot of ideas that can be ported over to such systems and might do a lot of the or might get rid of a lot of possible severe runtime errors. So that's probably a quite promising field of doing research over here. What should also be noted is that as Lua has not so many different features already built in, but as you have to implement them yourself, this takes away a lot of complications from the runtime and the compiler. So having such a minimalistic language is something that makes it quite easy to implement Lua interpreters in many environments or other languages. So that's why something like Lua is quite popular with as a kind of scripting language for larger systems. I don't know where you got to use the Lua somehow. Is it connected to some larger system, or do you just use plain Lua in some way? So it's used to kind of do your scripts for this large system, or
among others, yes.
Okay, so you were also using Lua. So that's what I've heard, but I've never really gotten into that. So. It's in famous engines or something.
Yeah, well, quite a few years ago, I think, when I started Crossword Warcraft, for the user interface specifications.
So, from your experiences, I think the constructions that we have in there for creating modules seem to me a little bit artificial. Do these practical Lua codes actually something similar than that? Do they really try to imitate standard object-oriented features, or do they just ignore that and concentrate on getting work done somehow unstructured?
So
it didn't really need so much structuring. How about? And
I used it for scripting the cry engine.
What's the name?
The
Ah, that's also gaming related.
Yeah. Yeah. They use kind of object oriented stuff for multiplayer stuff, but it was I didn't really like it. Python was way better even back then.
So is Python in a lot of cases also uses this kind of scripting? Real means of structuring or anything. Practical lab course at some point that implemented a whole Lua system, Lua interpreter, and can confirm that it's really quite easy, and you don't have to do a lot in order to get that running. So I can, well, it's obvious that there's a lot of places where you meet Lua interpreters in practice. So I can confirm that's really quite easy to write, and even getting a standard library for that, it's not so difficult. Okay, so that's what you should probably take away from Lua. If you are more into the whole thing, there's a lot of materials freely available on the net. Apart from that, I think I'm done with prototypes today, so it's a little bit early, but that's, I think you're fine with that. So have a nice week, and enjoy the tutorial session on Friday. So goodbye.